This is Radio Parallax, a slightly different perspective from a slightly different view, with topics that include matters in science, technology, history, politics, current events, and whatever we damn well please. And now the host of Radio Parallax, Douglas Everett.
Well, I think most of you, in fact, have noticed that we are in the midst of a coup d'etat. And for those of you unfamiliar with the definition of coup d'etat, we'll go to Merriam-Webster to inform us that it is a sudden, decisive exercise of force in politics, especially the violent overthrow or alteration of an existing government by a small group. And that, ladies and gentlemen, is an apt description of what we are now seeing, which was entirely predictable. We talked about what was going to happen many, many months ago in the event of Donald Trump winning the election, and we're now seeing it all unfold. To our great sorrow here at Radio Parallax. It is primarily for this reason that we are planning to take a hiatus from this program to regroup and plan what we might best do to lean in the other direction. So for the next few months, we are going to be semi-available at best. Our hope is that come spring, we'll be back. We'll have some people in tow to help us talk about matters. And we'll have a better idea of how to gauge what the hell is going on. Because right now, everybody is in a state of chaos and confusion, which is not necessarily a novelty in Mr. McMillan's case, and maybe sometimes in mine as well. But where to begin? You know, as a physician, I guess a logical place for yours truly to begin would be the fact that, to my horror, I witnessed the confirmation of Robert F. Kennedy Jr. to head the Department of Health and Human Services. Now, about a week or two ago, I noted that the CDC had, because of all the threats of firings and, again, the chaos and confusion, they did not, for the first time in about 40 years, publish their weekly report on morbidities and mortalities across the country. When yours truly was in medical school, I remember very well us taking a look at the latest developments in the AIDS crisis, and we were updated on a weekly basis by the CDC in their M&M reports. And one thing's certain, infectious diseases have not gone away and are not going to go away anytime soon. So the idea that we're going to shut down research into infectious disease and instead devote it to things like, I guess, I don't know, food dyes is not a welcome development. Politico posed the question recently of why is the healthcare industry letting RFK Jr. cruise to confirmation? A legitimate question to ask. Author Daniel Payne took a look at it. And let me quote from the piece. From drug makers to doctors, organizations, groups thought to have the clout to steer policy and funding in Washington because they enjoyed bipartisan support and huge lobbying budgets have remained silent about Kennedy. That's not because they aren't worried, but because they didn't think they could stop him or think the cost of speaking out would be too steep. This is according to five people who spoke to the author who represented health groups and were granted anonymity to speak candidly. By staying mum, they hope to limit the fallout if Kennedy follows through on his plans to strip the industry down to the studs. He quoted a Dr. George Benjamin, executive director of the American Public Health Association, as saying, "They think he's the wrong person for the job." He's one of the few groups to openly decry Kennedy's bid to lead the Department of Health and Human Services. With good respect to all my buddies, they're making the false assumption that if they stay silent, they will get something in return. Staying silent? The American Medical Association, the country's most prominent professional society for doctors, and one which I would hasten to add I've never joined, in spite of graduating medical school back in the 1980s. Although, I do want to say about the AMA, they're very insidious and clever. When I ran one clinic in Sacramento, my office manager kept getting notes from the AMA about how it was, you know, I could renew my membership and my insurance policies through the AMA. And I looked at him and said, I've never done that. That's nonsense. Just throw it in the garbage. Anyway, I don't think that much of the AMA, but, you know, they have traditionally been a powerful organization. And so, too, is the Pharmaceutical Research and Manufacturers America, the brand name drug lobby once seen as all-powerful in Washington. They've only said they want to work with Trump. And, of course, these are the guys that, you know, back during Bush-Cheney managed to engineer a drug law that, among other things, banned the ability of hospitals to bargain over drug rates. The way the law was set up is, you know, drug companies would offer you a price and you could take it or leave it. So I can't say I think too much of them either. And then we have the American Academy of Pediatrics. The article notes that those members provide the childhood vaccines Kennedy has claimed, in defiance of scientific consensus, cause autism. It isn't opposing him either. Which is odd, because in my experience, the American Academy of Pediatrics opposes everything that could conceivably in any way possibly affect the health of children. And we've joked about it on the show in the past, saying that I'm surprised that the American Academy of Pediatrics has not come out with a formal denunciation of sticks and rocks, given all the injuries they cause to children. Well, anyway, he's in. We're going to have to see what happens, and I'm pretty sure it's not going to be pretty. I did note with some humor that the movement that he heads is called the Make America Healthy Again, analogous to Make America Great Again, known as MAGA. So I guess his group is MAHA. And personally, the acronym MAHA to me evokes the Three Stooges.
The MAHA.
Anyway, the fact of the matter is that Mo, Larry, and Curly are now all deceased, which, of course, did preclude the possibility of Trump appointing them to join the Department of Health and Human Services. Now, when it comes to matters related to health and the Trump administration, believe it or not, and I'm scarcely can believe this myself, there is one aspect of what's being pushed that I agree with. Trump administration is eyeing a ban on gender transition. An order has been issued that directs federally run insurance programs, including TRICARE for military families and Medicare, to exclude coverage for gender transitions for people under the age of 19. As far as I'm concerned, doctors who provide hormones to minors or even perform surgery on them should all have their licenses revoked. That's not medicine, that's politics. And that's all I'm going to say on that. Well, I do want to quote a meme that was sent to me that I thought was pretty funny. It shows a laughing Barack Obama accompanying a statement that said the only person Trump ever hired who was actually qualified to do their job was Stormy Daniels. And no, I don't know that Obama said it, but I hope he did. And in other news related to the Kennedy family, the JFK files, long withheld from public scrutiny, that Trump said he would release. Well, that remains to be seen. And I remain extremely skeptical that we're going to see some really important documents being released. Although it was funny to note that the FBI apparently found a couple thousand documents that nobody noticed before. Huh, look at this. I was somewhat stunned to note that the Representative Luna, who is heading, I guess, the commission to look into what might get released, has already said that, you know, what I've seen shows that there were two shooters. And I would hasten to add to that you don't need any newly released documents for you to come to that conclusion. But we certainly wish Jefferson Morley and Bill Simpich and others who have been pushing for this to you know, hopefully have their efforts bear fruit. We really do hope that will happen. I'm just skeptical that it will. And Jeff Morley did put together an excellent list of the most wanted, the 15 JFK files for Representative Luna's investigators that they would like to see made public. And to check out that list, we would send you to jfkfacts.com. You know, one guy we're really sorry we never were able to get on this program was the late, great Anthony Bourdain. Oh, and on Super Bowl Sunday, yours truly wisely avoided that spectacle and instead went on a trip down toward Monterey. And passing through all those fertile farm fields, I noted that there were no people out in the fields working. I've heard that Mexican laborers are making themselves scarce for fear of being rounded up and sent away. And while I can't say for sure that that's true, what we observed is certainly consistent with it. Anyway, here's what Bourdain had to say. Despite our ridiculously hypocritical attitudes towards immigrants, we demand that Mexicans cook a large percentage of the food we eat, grow the ingredients we need to make that food, clean our houses, mow our lawns, wash our dishes, look after our children. As any chef will tell you, our entire service economy, the restaurant business as we know it, in most American cities, would collapse overnight without Mexican workers. Some, of course, like to claim that Mexicans are stealing American jobs. But in two decades, as a chef and employer, I never had one American kid walk in my door and apply for a dishwashing job, a porter's position, or even a job as a prep cook. Mexicans do much of the work in this country that Americans probably simply won't do. And we're quite certain he's right about that. I can vouch for this fact because as a young man with a grandfather who was a farmer, I did do some agricultural work. And I'm here to tell you, for the most part, a lot of it wasn't much fun. And of course, by virtue of how we've organized our food growing industry, it doesn't pay very well either. Now, a lot of right-wingers have been mouthing off about this for a long time, claiming that that Mexicans are taking American jobs. But I well remember when I was in medical school, the area down in Southern California where the I-5 meets the 405, and if you've driven down there, you know where I'm talking about, it used to all be strawberry fields. Well, at least it was back in my day. But of course, Orange County is a bastion of conservatism and, you know, right-wingism, although I understand that they haven't elected a Republican to Congress in a while, which really shocks me. At any rate, the Republicans in Orange County decided they were going to go into the fields, the strawberry fields, they were going to take all the Mexican laborers out of there and put up in the local newspapers ads for ag jobs. What do you think happened? Well, I'll tell you. People did show up. Some people did show up anyway. They were put out in the fields to do the work. They spent about one day doing it and said, this is too hard, it doesn't pay well enough. I can make more money on welfare. To hell with it. So ended that experiment. And by the way, the grand experiment we're conducting all across the country right now, I feel quite confident, is going to have a similar outcome. And yeah, I do realize there's an awful lot of people, like say at the NIH, that are now unemployed, but I'm pretty sure they're not going to go out and pick fruit. And of course, as you go about firing people right and left, willy-nilly, as if you're demented, hint, hint, odd things are bound to happen, such as laying off America's nuclear scientists that take care of our atomic weapons. Yeah, sure, you're a conservative, you just say, Energy Department, we don't need that, let's get rid of it. Oh, wait, what about all those hydrogen bombs? We understand they're busy trying to rehire those folks, realizing that, well, I guess we do need them. But apparently in their haste, have apparently lost some of the context for how to find them. But, you know, we hope they do. Now, because Radio Parallax is broadcast on a public radio station, a call to action telling you to go out and do something is not kosher. Therefore, we will not suggest you go out and sign this or that petition, but we will tell you that both myself and Mr. Millen are ready, willing, and able to sign that petition put out by Denmark that suggests that California can be bought by the Danes. We're hoping they don't see that as a bargaining chip for Greenland, but then again, you know, if they do, sure, that's a fair swap. Have Trump take over the island with the ice cap and let the Danes run our healthcare system. Now, last summer, yours truly and girlfriend happened to travel on a tour in the Caucasus Republics, consisting of Azerbaijan, Georgia, and Armenia. Our group included a lovely Danish couple. We got to chat with them quite a bit. They did reiterate that the Danes were not going to sell Greenland to America. But you know, that was back when it was candidate Donald Trump. Now that it's President Donald Trump, the European Union is mobilizing for military support to put the EU at odds with America over Greenland. I think most people would agree this is not a good development. And speaking of not good developments, we have the fact that, well, first off, Donald Trump is now comparing himself to Napoleon. Now, it's really not an apt comparison if you know anything about Napoleon, because Napoleon was, in fact, a military and political genius. Now, we understand that Donald Trump's classmates, when he was sent to military school to try and straighten him out by his dad, Fred Trump, his classmates all regarded him as a bully. And we'd have to classify it as something of a bullying post on social media for Trump to say that he who saves his country does not violate any law. That's a variation of a quote that is attributed to Napoleon. Now, we do want to point out that Napoleon Bonaparte's idea of saving his nation was to make himself emperor of France. He had managed to cleverly switch sides during the French Revolution to position him so that eventually he could pull that one off. But you know, that just isn't a quote that should resonate well here in America unless you're wearing a red MAGA hat. New York Times columnist Jamel Bowie called Trump's message the single most un-American and anti-constitutional statement ever uttered by an American president. And, you know, it's hard to argue with that. Now, here in Radio Parallax, among our favorite topics, in addition to things like, you know, what really happened to the poor 35th president of the United States, John F. Kennedy, we spent a lot of time on this show taking a look at Russiagate, the collaboration between Vladimir Putin and Donald Trump. And we're certainly not going to rehash that on today's program. But to those of you who are skeptical that such a thing was real, you know, a collaboration between Trump and Putin or between Trump's forces and Russian forces, we would like to point out that as we speak, the U.S. is planning to go over and settle the Ukraine war with the Russians. Oh, no, they haven't invited the Ukrainians. If you are a student of history, dear listener, and we certainly hope that you are to a degree, you will no doubt recall the 1936 Munich Pact. And if you don't remember it, let's just go over it just a bit. Back in 1936, an expansionist Hitler and his Nazi regime, which had already basically annexed Austria and made it part of Greater Germany, looked further to the east and claimed that there's a lot of Germans living in, well, Czechoslovakia. And there were. There were various ethnic groups all over Europe, piecemeal. But there was quite a large German population, German speakers, in what was called the Sudetenland, the area of western Czechoslovakia that bordered Germany and Prussia. And yes, I know Prussia's part of Germany, but, you know, anyway. Hitler was taking a look at this and said, you know, we need to annex this area, the Sudetenland, and make it part of Greater Germany. Now, it so happened the Czechs were not too keen on this idea. And by the way, the Czechs had quite a significant munitions industry. They had a geography that was favorable for defense against invading forces. Had World War II started right then, the Czechs would have put up a hell of a fight. And it might have alerted the world to what Adolf Hitler was up to. But wouldn't you know it, the British Prime Minister, Neville Chamberlain, arranged for his French counterpart to meet with Hitler and Mussolini to carve up Czechoslovakia. And no one thought it would be polite to invite the Czechs to the meeting. So it was that their country was carved up by four foreign leaders. Neville Chamberlain famously returned to Britain, waving the document that he'd signed and telling the press, "I think it means peace in our time." Except, what do you know, 3 years later, when Hitler continued to turn his eye to the east, he decided, well, it's time to take Poland. And that was, in fact, when World War II began, because the French and British thought they were obliged to support their allies in Poland. But alas, Poland was flat country and was overrun by Hitler in no time, assisted in this case by an invasion of Poland from the east by Stalin's Soviet Union. So began the catastrophe that was World War II, but, you know, really, it should have started back in 1936. And here we are in 2025, the U.S. and Vladimir Putin deciding how it is they might just carve up Ukraine without input from the Ukrainians. The mind reels. And for more on this, we refer you to our many talks with Stephen J. Harper about Russiagate, and also our discussion with Craig Unger about his book, American Compromat, dealing with the distinct possibility that the Russians had something on Trump from way back. And considering the fact that Donald Trump is a man who has nothing nice to say about just about anybody, yet has never, never had one bad thing to say about Vladimir Putin or Russia, well, it does make it seem as though they do have something on him. And of course, the case made by Craig Unger and Stephen Harper and many, many others is that investing in Donald Trump 20 years ago could potentially have a huge payday if you're, you know, Vladimir Putin and his gang of Russian oligarchs. And wow, here we are. They're bogged down in a war in Ukraine, and here comes Donald Trump to the rescue to see if they can't arrange a way to carve up that country to Russia's benefit. Now, the Donald is a little bit late on this. He did promise his followers that he would solve the Ukrainian war on day one, and now we're a month in. And by the way, I did like the fact that somebody pointed out that, well, it's 1 month down, 47 to go. Of course, the nice part about that is that the Europeans are organizing to step in and do what they can to stop Ukraine being carved into chunks. Now, the NATO alliance looks looking pretty dead in the water under a Trump administration, but Ukraine was never a part of NATO. Oh, and to those of you out there that claim that Vladimir Putin is justified because they made noise about letting Ukraine join NATO, and therefore the Russians had a right to step in and, you know, prevent that from happening. Well, all I can say to you is stop smoking crack. You think Russia is acting honorably in all this? And yeah, I don't want to say, like, you know, that, like, we don't act dishonorably, because by God, we sure do. But if you think Russia has acted honorably, well, you should probably talk to the people in Sweden and the people in Finland, both of whom decided it was time to join NATO. We're talking about the Swedes here, you know? I mean, the most congenitally neutral people you can think of are this side of the Swiss, practically, and they're now in NATO. Anyway, in spite of the fact that we here at Radio Parallax feel the need to take a break, we certainly hope that the international media will continue to do some pushback. Now, I got a big scare several days ago when a friend of mine asked me if I knew about the fact that Elon Musk had purchased ABC. And I was pretty gobsmacked at the possibility of that happening, and I quickly went and checked it out on Snopes and other places. They said, no, that's not true. That was based on a joke post that got untethered. Then again, as it stands, Elon Musk wields a lot of clout in the media. You can buy ads, you can buy spots, and he did so during the campaign to the tune of $250 million to help get Trump elected. He's in charge of X, which is media. It's the 21st century version of media. And there's Jeff Bezos at Amazon, who owns the Washington Post and decided that, well, you know, this time we're not going to endorse anybody for president. And then there's Mark Zuckerberg, who, after being pilloried for the lack of fact-checking on then Facebook, now Meta, he decided he needed to make it look like he was doing something about it. So I guess he did it for a while. But nah, Mark's thought about it again and said, you know what, we're gonna dial all that back. We're gonna let the community discussion act as fact checking. And there's Larry Ellison. I'm not sure what Ellison, the owner of Oracle, has to do with the media, but I mean, I'm sure he wields a lot of influence. Oh, and by the way, the four people I just mentioned, Elon Musk, Jeff Bezos, Mark Zuckerberg, Larry Ellison, these are the world's four richest men. And all four are playing ball with Donald J. Trump. And the sixth and seventh richest men in the world, Larry Page and Sergey Brin, founders of Google, well, they weren't there up on the dais with Trump on Inauguration Day, but their representative. But by God, the CEO of Google was up there with those other esteemed gentlemen in the guise of Sundar Pichai. Google did decide to kiss Trump rear-end by acknowledging that, maybe it's time to rename the Gulf of Mexico the Gulf of America. You know, and I can't resist quoting the leader of the free world on this issue, because he started out by saying, we're going to be changing the name of the Gulf of Mexico to the Gulf of America, which has a beautiful ring that covers a lot of territory. The Gulf of America, what a beautiful name. It's like the whole ocean. Take an acre, you know, an acre. You have a house on half an acre, one quarter of an acre, or an acre. If you have an acre, you have a big deal. Now you multiply that by 625 million acres. It's like, feels like the whole ocean. Is that the ravings of a demented man? Well, I'll leave it up for you to decide, dear listener. But by God, Google Maps in America is going to rename the Gulf of Mexico the Gulf of America. Now, the Mexicans, after raising an objection to this, well, when you Google in Mexico, apparently it will still say the Gulf of Mexico. But in other locations, you'll be given both names. You can pick the one you like. Now, in our second segment today, we're gonna take a look at some of Donald Trump's recent ravings. Is a demented man being manipulated by aides and tech billionaires to sign documents that he's not even read? We think the evidence is extremely strong that, yes, that is what's going on. We'll let Dave Pakman expound upon that one in our second segment. But we are getting near a time to take a short break. I'm Douglas Everett. This is Radio Parallax. And I think for outro music, Mr. Mullen is going to choose something very appropriate to Donald J. Trump.
They're coming to take me away, ha-ha. They're coming to take me away, ho-ho, hee-hee, ha-ha. To the funny farm where life is beautiful all the time. And I'll be happy to see those nice young men in their clean white coats. And they're coming to take me away, ha-ha. To the happy home with trees and flowers and...